So we have three law students in the room, and there's a lot of smiles and nods. Is that something that resonates, guys?
Yeah, that's really interesting, Duke. I really wish I learned such skills in school. And, I was just wondering, how do you think law schools should impart these skills? Because they're not just, hard skills, legal stuff. So it's harder to get a message across sometimes. So how would you suggest, teaching these skills in an effective manner to the students?
So there's no... the long answer to that, and I think it's just a critical question. And this talks... there's a lot of discussion about how law school should be changing or should change at all. And I think it's not about how they should do it differently, per se, but I think first is the notion... the pervasive notion you find in law schools across the globe, in North America, in Europe, in Asia, is that law schools teach theory, and then practice somehow happens after you graduate. Mm-hmm. And that's how most law schools are structured, and that's how most, for example, professors are rewarded, right? Theory, academic research, and so forth. But if you look at, I would reframe the question differently. How is expertise created? Whether it's legal expertise or problem solving work. And if you look at the literature, it's very clear that expertise is a combination of both theory and practice. They inform each other, right? Whereas most law schools operate on the notion that, well, in law school, we teach theory, and then we don't teach skills. That's what happens at law firms, and it's not our responsibility. However, if you look at how people learn, it's about how do you create the foundation for lifelong learning? Mm. So, which means that in law school, you should be taught the foundation that involves a combination of both theory and practice. Right? And I think... at the moment, most law schools only teach theory, and they don't incorporate practice to give context to the theory. And so what law school teach is good, important, necessary, but it's incomplete. So it's not about teaching different things, but about complementing what is being taught. So let me give you a very real example. If you take a course on acquisitions in any law school, NUS, Harvard, Yale, Melbourne Law School. They teach the public regulatory frameworks that apply to private transactions, right? What are the duties of the board members? What are registration requirements? They look at cases that look at problems that arise from acquisitions. But they don't look at the other half of acquisition is how do private parties negotiate, think about what they're trying to exchange or buy or sell to each other. So teaching the public regulatory piece of acquisition is one part of the field of acquisition, but law schools don't teach a foundation on the other half, which is how private parties, why would I want something from you? May I want something from you, but I don't trust you. How do we, create a relationship moving forward in this transaction? And it's not about whether the law tells me I can't buy or not. I know I can buy from you, but I want to enter into this relationship with you, but I don't trust you under these conditions. Mm-hmm. How do lawyers, what are the role of lawyers, and how do they apply their legal skills to create a contract to manage, help the clients, resolve those types of concerns, some of which are not legal, but it's about how we want to interact with each other if we enter into this transaction. So like I said, I think most law schools, what they teach is good, but it's incomplete. So I think I would say there are, obviously, courses you can teach in and of itself to teach that context. But I think it's more of re-looking at the different courses we teach, and we say, are we teaching the entire foundation of family law, criminal law, transactions or whatever the case may be, that provides that context rather than just, doctrinal law.
Yeah, on that point, Duke, it seems like all these skills you would get whilst getting on the job or getting in practice. So how do students and people in law school get these experiences? Have you seen any good examples to get this practical experience?
So it's an important question, because actually a general counsel just asked me today, well, you know, how do you teach this when the law students haven't had any practical experience? Right? And I think it's a notion that I think has hindered a lot of reform in legal education. And what do I mean by that? Again, your question assumes that this expertise is acquired primarily through experience. And I'm saying that's absolutely not true, because in terms of how the literature looks at expertise creation is a combination of theory as well as practice, mm-hmm. right? And when I say theory, it's not about a legal theory, but about, let's say in transactional lawyering, how we exchange things that goes beyond law, right? And the assumption that I'm questioning is reflected in conversation in the profession, like, well, law schools are not graduating practice-ready graduates, right? Which I think is the wrong question to ask, because no one can be practice-ready on day one, right? Just because you take some golf classes doesn't mean you're ready to play on an 18, you know, whole golf course upon graduation. What a good golf course class does is teach you foundation of the swing. Then maybe you go to a small course and practice a lot, and then ultimately move on to a bigger course, and so forth. So what I'm saying is that what is that? Are we actually providing that foundation so that upon graduation, people have the foundation upon which they can build a house? But so if I can continue the analogy, in a sense, we're saying, okay, I'll give you half the foundation, and then when you graduate, we expect you to build a second story.
Mm.
It just doesn't work that way for most. Yeah. Right? Most people don't learn that way.
This is music to my ears. Because I love the fact that you're emphasizing the fact that, yeah, we're asking the wrong questions, and I think law schools can teach when and how to apply those commercial skills at a theoretical and a practical level, right? So you can't just, sideline these commercial skills because they're practical skills. I also think there's an important theoretical component to it as well, just understanding that there is a second side to the coin, that's the legal component. And I think these problems don't get resolved when we go into practice, and that's the reason why lawyers don't understand how to provide that useful commercial value and the useful solution to the client. So maybe we can shift gears again and bring it back to the legal profession more broadly. So before we were talking about creating value for clients, providing a more holistic and useful service to clients, I'm really curious to know, what type of advice do you give partners and leaders in the legal services industry to drive this change? So we were talking about the tools before, but let's touch on the mindset component as well, because you bring a really interesting perspective on mindset, because mindset alone is not enough to create change, mm-hmm. and the tools aren't enough to create the change. So I think you have such a dynamic understanding of what it takes to advance meaningful change within the legal profession. And I love the fact, you're talking about not just commercial skills, but, why are you using these commercial skills? And, if you are using technology, why are you using technology? So anyway, enough of my fangirl moment. It's seriously music.
They're all googly eyes. Yeah. They're all googly eyes, yeah.
It's really a really refreshing perspective. So let's touch on the mindset component first.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the mindset and tools, I think you describe it very well, which is very iterative. The mindset, a change can inform the tools or help you develop better tools, and developing better tools will then reinforce the mindset that you want to create. Mm-hmm. So it's actually very iterative. So in the profession, you know, unfortunately, we tell lawyers they should have the mindset. And again, they nod, you know, intellectually they understand it, but if we don't give them the tools, they cannot reinforce that mindset because they don't see it, how it works in practice. You don't know what you don't know. You're told you should know it, but you don't see how it works in practice for you. So I think, like I said, it's critical to have both, right? And so, yes, we can set up, hey, the mindset, well, you should be a good problem solver, a good business partner, be adaptable to technology, you know, whatever, all the platitudes we may, you know, many of us have heard, but without the tools to, again, accelerate the change of mindset and having, you know, having mindset, then push, you know, having better tools, then again, it's incomplete. Right? If you keep telling people to be something without giving the tools, it's just not, generally, it just won't happen.
All right, so the legal industry is actually going through this wave of change. So many industry players are looking at this new situation and they don't really know how to approach it. So do you think that these like law firms, in-house counsels, or just about anyone, should they be like getting on board with the change, or like what kind of mindset should they adopt?
Yeah, so no, great question. You know, change has been a constant theme. And so, and I'm fortunate to be able to work with, in my current job, with a number of firms and in-house departments, as well as general counsel and many partners. And I actually see two trends, and they're both, you know, are troubling in their own way. One is that there's a lot of conversation about change without deeper discussion. As a result, many lawyers feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
They're being told that they have to be, again, you know, business partners, adaptable technology, you know, good soft skills, good technical skills, and some even, you know, oddball comments that lawyers should know how to code. And there are these constant messages being bombarded, bombarding lawyers. And so many lawyers I find are actually, they feel overwhelmed because they don't know where to begin. And so, and the consequence of that is actually nothing happens because they're all very busy and there are a lot of pressure at their jobs or whatever the case may be. So they actually just go back to doing their job in part because they're overwhelmed and they don't know where to even start. The other trend is actually on the other side, which is there are organizations like firms and in-house departments that because they see their competitors doing something or what they read or, you know, consultants say they should be doing, they actually start making changes without thinking through, without having a disciplined way of deciding where to change. And so, for example, in law firms I speak to, heads of, let's say, business development, learning and development, maybe, you know, service innovation. And they're all making changes there in their silos, and they actually don't know how it connects with the other functions in the firm. And so what I see a lot is our organizations making these decisions without having a disciplined methodology of why, you know, what decisions do they face? The consequences of certain choices, and then how do you prioritize those choices? And so if you don't have a disciplined way of approaching change, what happens, and there's a lot of research on it, there's a lot of what's called wasted innovation. In fact, most efforts to innovate, and when I say innovation, it's about change, not necessarily involving technology, but just trying to do something differently. Most innovation efforts are wasted because of the lack of discipline. And it's just not the direct cost of wasted innovation, but failed innovation often gives impetus to the naysayers in the organization to say, see, I told you it wouldn't work. So the next time, you know, that organization wants to do some, make some additional changes, then those naysayers actually have more say, hey, I told you it didn't work last time and it didn't work, so why should we believe you this time? Right? So the costs of innovation are quite significant. So whether it's from an individual level, from a lawyer's level, or an organization. My work, for example, is to bring some discipline to that analysis, whether it's about individual talent development of individual lawyer, or from an organization point of view, a law firm or a corporate in-house department. What are the choices that we face, whether it's client service, the actual service offerings of the lawyers, or do we buy certain technology and not others? How much real estate do we need? They're all interlinked choices. Mm. And if you look at the analysis holistically, there's no perfect answer, but you're more able to make better decisions.
Mm.
Because the worst decisions will lead to, like I mentioned, wasted innovation.
Can I ask a question off the back of that?
Sure.
Okay, because I'm begging to know, so what does this discipline look like? So we know that they have to make certain strategic choices depending on what their resources are, where they operate in the market, who are they as a firm, but how do you help them make those choices and what factors drive those choices?
Yeah, so there are existing frameworks. So, for a professional services organization like a law firm or consulting, there are actually real tools to look at client selection choices. What, the clients you select to service, what they buy, what they value, and the pricing that they're willing to pay. Then once you've kind of preliminarily made those choices, then you look at, well, what exactly are we selling, which is our people, then what are the skills that they need to have to deliver the services that these clients want to buy at what pricing that will provide the profit for the law firm. And then the third piece of that, for example, is, well, aside from the people, what's the infrastructure? How much real estate? What's the technology? What's the pricing structure? What's the compensation structure? What's the learning and development program? So those are what can be categorized in the infrastructure bucket, if you will. So I mentioned those three kind of categories of issues that a professional service should look at, which is the client issues, the people issues, and the infrastructure. And then a particular firm will have to look, well, where are we providing the most unique value in the market compared to everyone else? Which clients are willing to buy those? At what price? And what do we have to build to attract the people to provide those services that these clients want to buy? So these, as you can see, these are all interlinked decisions. And so going back to my initial comments, many organizations make these decisions without seeing how they're linked.
Mm-hmm.
They often buy technology without thinking about, well, how does it impact the way our people work to create the things that these clients want to buy? Or, wait a minute, if these are the things that clients want to buy from us, do we really need that much technology or real estate? Or wait a minute, are we provide the right kind of training for our people to provide these kinds of services that these clients will buy? So what I try to do is help organizations see how those choices are linked and how to assess those. Again, the idea is to have to make better decisions so that they can be successful.
And to build up on that point, Duke, oftentimes change or the push for change might not come from the top, it might come from the bottom. But how do you ensure, or how do you bring this up to the people that need to hear it, that can actually invest in such change?
Mm.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, it may come from the bottom, it may come from leadership or lack of leadership.
Sorry, I just, these poor junior associates, just like the bottom of the bottom. Yeah, yeah.
It may come from the clients. It may come from the people in the organization itself. Mm-hmm. And so it's really very unique to each organization. So for example, I'm doing some work with a very successful practice at a global firm. They're very successful. But they came to me and said, look, we're actually kind of worried about the future because we see more competition, and we want to understand, how we differentiate ourselves, continue to differentiate ourselves. So, we work together, and we're now developing a partner development program for that practice. So their leadership was, skilled and prescient to say, hey, look, we're in a good place now, but so we think it's the best time to make these changes. other organizations will wait for bad things to happen before they're pushed to make these changes. And so it really depends on the organization. And I think oftentimes it comes down to leadership. And other times it comes from a burning platform.
Mm. So, Duke, if you had a crystal ball, where do you think all of this is heading to?
I think, Naomi, what we talked about recently, and there's strands of this theme running across the various questions that we received today, mm-hmm. Is that there's a lot of noise in the profession.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people saying many different things.
Yeah.
And so, like I say, one of the consequences is that many of our people in our community, the lawyers, the law students, they feel overwhelmed
mm-hmm.
because they don't know where to even begin. And
join flip.
And that's right. And organizations feel overwhelmed, law firms as well as in-house departments. So I think we all have a responsibility in the role, including Flip and myself. Is
Yay.
How can we bring some structure to the discussion?
Mm-hmm.
How do we simplify and explain better the really important issues? How can we look at problems differently rather than, you know, contributing to the platitudes that we often hear mm-hmm. in the profession? And I think if we as a community develop that discipline, then I think it'll go a long way to helping our community members to, again, make better decisions, either from an individual development perspective, how do I develop myself as a lawyer, as a leader,
mm-hmm.
and also help organizations, like I said, make better decisions about how to, you know, manage and operate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a critical role for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, thank you for inviting me. We've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I've really enjoyed it, and thank you for having me today.
Awesome. This was absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much, Duke, for making the time to share your insights and your thought leadership with us. Thank you to anyone who's listened. A big thank you to my wonderful co-hosts today. Hopefully this was fun. Thank you.
Yes, it was. Thank you.